This tape was recorded in April of 1977 at the home of George R. Frank in Columbus, Ohio, by Edward Hamblin with his son John. Mr. Frank died in July of 1977 in an auto accident at Camp Kewaunee.
For a while with you this afternoon about your reminiscences on the initiation of Camp Kewaunee and how it evolved into the camp that it is today. Is it true that the camp was founded in 1921?
It's the first year.
That was the first year that you had, actual boys?
We had boys. We had 16 boys the first year, and 12 from this area, and four from this area, and 12 from the east.
Oh, I see. Well,
Raymond and Englewood. Raymond was in church activity work at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I found four out here. And of course, it started because I formerly had hay fever for several years, and I found there I didn't have it.
I see.
So we solicited parents whose youngsters had hay fever.
Uh-huh.
And there were 16 boys that came to camp. They're all hay fever guys.
Well, that worked too, didn't it?
Well,
it was a good place.
It did work. It's
people.
Worked ever since then.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the reason that I've been coming back there every year since about 1909. And I'd usually stay in the fall during the hay fever period, you know.
Uh-huh.
But for the first 5 or 6 years up there, I had to come back for school. See, I was director of industrial arts and then became principal of McCuffrey Junior High School for 20 years.
Now, you were director of industrial arts for the Columbus school system.
Yes.
I know, and you know, you and I sat down mm-hmm. like this. It just occurred to me, you know, this isn't the first time we've sat down and talked like this, because when I was working toward a master's degree at Ohio State, you told me all about the founding of the Indianola School and
sure.
how you were in the upstairs part of that in one of the first, if not the first, junior high school in the United States.
I was the first junior high teacher of industrial arts in the United States.
Right.
Yeah.
So this isn't as new to me. I hadn't thought about that until just this very instance.
That's
when
right.
we started talking. Well, now, where did the boys stay? Were they in tents then, that those first years? Or did you use the Deer Lodge?
Up in the camp?
Yes, uh-huh.
Well, let me lead up to this.
All right.
Go through some of this. I've
mm-hmm.
got it down here. So many people have not quite how Kewaunee ever got started. And it's quite interesting if you follow through with it. It really started in by going to well, that's on the other side of Mount Blue,
mm-hmm.
for a vacation with my cousin, Bert Mitchell.
I see.
And the first year I was there, a big buck got into one of his gardens, and he shot it because it was tearing up his garden.
Mm-hmm.
Well, next day, Bert suggested that we climb Mount Blue and have a venison feed on top.
Oh.
In 1910.
So
we climbed Mount Blue, and from the top of Mount Blue, I saw Lake Webb for the first time in 1910.
Mm.
Two sailboats were sailing up the lake with the wind blowing fresh from the gap. They were the Demo Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And I became so intrigued with it. Beautiful, beautiful. It's hard to describe a scene sometimes. It's just beautiful, that's all.
Right.
So I made up my mind, if I ever got married, I was going to try to get a cottage on this lake.
Uh-huh.
Well, sure enough, 1912, I was married.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to this lake for the first year in 1912.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been coming there every year since.
So that's something.
Well, now and then, we came back each summer. And in 1917, I invited Raymond to come for his vacation, spend his vacation with us.
Hmm.
Well, he was in his Boy Scout work quite extensively. And we both became quite interested in the possibility of starting a boys' camp. Well, why should we start it? We rode around this lake three times. And each time, we rested down on a dock by overlooking the camp area, sailboat and swimming area, and skiing area. We rested on the dock overlooking that beautiful cold beach, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought, well, that's the ideal spot if we can just get it. So we talked to Mrs. Decker, who owned the property all up and down the lake.
Mm-hmm.
Said, yes, I think I can sell you 60 acres.
Hmm.
She told us what she would sell us. Well, happened to be the very spot we'd fallen in love with.
Oh, my goodness.
That cold beach there. And
mm-hmm.
isn't it a finer location in the country than we have right there? So we, with all the 60 acres, Raymond and I decided we'd start the boys' camp. And we got a little literature and passed it around to some of our friends. And I said we got 16 boys the first year, and four from this area.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the first year up there, they started building in 1918. They started building the main dining hall in the Eagle and Falcon Lodges.
Oh, I see.
And the first year camp opened in 1921. They hadn't quite completed the dining hall, so we ate our July meals down in the Deer Lodge.
I see.
Went down there for our Deer Lodge, for the meals. My God, believe it or not, there are very few mosquitoes that summer.
Uh-huh. Well, that was lucky.
And in August, we moved back into the dining hall, and we were up there for the first year, 1921. Mm-hmm. And Raymond and I didn't expect it. We didn't want to go over 60 boys. We thought the ideal camp was a camp where the boys would get acquainted with the men. It's mm-hmm. the contact with the men we wanted them to have. If you have a crowded camp, why, it's too crowded, that's all. So we thought we'd stop with 60. Mm-hmm. Well, the next year, we had 16 the first year. The next year, we filled those first two cabins and were ready to build a third cabin. Hmm. The parents took it right out of our hands. We said, no, we didn't have to do anything. The parents did it for us. It's been that way ever since we were on this camp. The parents have done it for us. Mm-hmm. That's where we started.
The kind of spirit and the sort of the place they wanted their sons to be.
That's right. And it's been growing that way every year, the same way. Now, let's see if there's anything else. Oh, when we were surveying this area and fell in love with this beach area where the swimming is, we walked out a little road that led out to the athletic fields. There's a big field there planted in potatoes. Mm. We thought right away, well, that'd make a nice athletic field, yeah, which it has.
Sure.
So everything was right in our hands there, right to start with.
Yeah. Then you were saying some of the outstanding counselors or campers in the 20s. It'd be kind of fun to have you maybe reminisce over a few of those.
Two of the principal men that had so much to do with the starting of the camp was Harry Marshall. Mm-hmm. Later he became the principal of North High School in Commerce. And Max Seville, he was had his doctor's degree, and he was, I think he's teaching out of one of the Western colleges. And he and Raymond were great friends in Springfield Y College. From Springfield, Massachusetts, when Raymond went through there.
I see.
And so Max Seville and Harry Marshall were the two men that really gave us the greatest assistance mm-hmm. during the first 10 years anyway. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they came back each year.
So what, tripping? Did one of them have tripping?
Well, and Harry Marshall was the head counselor. Uh-huh. And in those early days, all the counselors played with the boys. It was a baseball team, and half of them would be counselors. Mm-hmm. And Max Seville was extremely fine, very efficient fellow. And he's got an interesting note about Max. Florence, my wife at that time, used to kid him about the girls. Mm-hmm. And he couldn't seem to find any girl in this country that pleased him. So he went to Spain, and he fell in love with a Spanish lassie over there. Mm-hmm. And they were married. And Max said afterwards, says, just as long as I couldn't understand Spanish, she couldn't understand English, we'd get along just well.
Yeah,
well, well we had Max's little boy in camp.
Oh, I see.
And the most, he just suffered. He couldn't seem to understand the American boys.
Oh, I see.
He just suffered. Anybody sat on his bed while he'd just go into hysterics. Mm-hmm. So he's only there 1 year.
Oh, that's too bad.
And
that was probably a disappointment.
Max and his wife were divorced. Mm-hmm. And I think after a period of 4 or 5 years, they were remarried. I think mm-hmm. they're still married. Mm-hmm. But that, we always were interested in Max. Mm-hmm. But he was a very efficient fellow, and he played the part of the chief. Mm-hmm. Ed Chase played for so many years, don't you know?
I see.
Mm-hmm. Max Seville was a chief. In fact, he originated that idea, having a chief, Chief Gawney.
I see. That was some story, you know, that you and I touched on just in your office before I left camp, yeah. Is the origin of the chief and what in a sense, a myth, a story that you made up that gave a certain character to the camp and establish some ideals for
it. We visualized that the Indians were camped up around the range of lakes, and on their way to the coast, they used to come down and go down our lake, down Red River. Mm-hmm. And there are indications that the Indians had lived for several years on our lake. Mm-hmm. So, digging around, they found arrowheads and things like that, don't you know?
Sure.
So the Indians were there in the early days. But Oh, we think that location, I don't think it's another location in the country can compare with it.
So then Chief Kiwani then, Max, was the one that kind of developed the story, or how did you kind of develop the story of Chief Kiwani?
Well, Max Savelle.
He did that.
We followed in, and he was a genius. No question about it. But Harry Marshall was a very influential fellow. The reason I was interested in Harry, because he was a very prominent member of the First Congregational Church, which I belong to now.
Mm-hmm.
And he knew a lot of people with boys.
Sure.
And I didn't know them.
Right.
So I induced Harry to join our camp. He'd been in the camp the previous year up in Cleveland, and he left early because he got so disgusted with the management.
I see.
He left, but I persuaded him that Raymond and I are pretty good guys, don't you know, and he said he'd come with us and try it out.
Well, he had a great deal of idealism on youth work. I know I talked with him again about
you knew Harry Marshall, of course.
Yes, I interviewed him, you see, back again in the 50s when I was talking with you about the first junior high school, and he told me about his idealism on running schools and having responsibilities.
Well, he believed in discipline.
Yes.
Now, in our camp, I regret that we don't have the discipline. We used to have it one time, but we couldn't have it. But we used to insist on the boys, if they signed up for something, insisted on them going there.
Sure.
And Marlin would cut it, don't you know? And Harry Marshall would find out, he'd bring him right in. But he'd bring him into the office and say, this is what you're going to do, and you can pack your trunk.
Sure.
And nobody packed a trunk. But he brought them in, and we had some boys that were hard to discipline. We had what they call a working squad. They had to work for a week. And they had to deny their activities, but they had to work. And they really worked. The counselors found out what they wanted done and called on these boys to do it, and they had to do it. And they got up back into the grace of the management, and there it never happened again.
Sure. Well, I imagine again that the parents appreciated that because they knew what the purpose for your doing.
Much more discipline than they were getting at home.
Sure.
I bet the parents liked it.
Mm.
A few parents, of course, just on the other side. But...
Well, I was wondering then, going into the 30s now, reading in the history books and so forth, you know about the Depression and the difficult times of the 30s. Did this somewhat influence the direction of the camp? Or were you somewhat influenced about your program or a number of boys by the
initial program was started way back in 1921, you might say.
Mm-hmm.
Had an idea what we wanted to do, and Max had along with Raymond was in Boy Scout work.
Mm-hmm.
And we decided what we wanted to do, and it spread from there. And Raymond had rheumatic fever as a little boy.
Mm-hmm.
He was never too strong. He liked to take care of the books. He worked in the office too much, and I was left the outside supervision. Of course, I designed all the buildings. I liked architectural drawing, had a little training in it. I designed all the buildings and headed up a lot of those outside activities that Raymond couldn't do. And he finally passed away because of this trouble he had as a youngster.
In other words, his health was influenced then in his later life because of this rheumatic fever.
Yeah.
And
I never get over that.
Now, I see. I had an associate of mine out in Washington that had that.
He was a great scout man, though. He had big scout troops in his church. He had church activity, worked at a very wealthy church in Englewood. And he had scouting there of those boys, and a lot of his scouts came to camp.
Mm-hmm.
It's a wealthy community.
So his responsibilities more with the bookkeeping and the management of the camp from that
Scout
side.
Camp craft work, I handled all the aquatics, and I handled all the shop work. Of course, that was my favorite subject.
Uh-huh.
And I handled the range, and Raymond had the basketball and tennis. Mm-hmm. And general athletics. Camp craft and Sunday services. Of course, I'd put the willing for him to handle Sunday services because he liked it.
Yes, right. In other words, when did you begin having, were the Myers? Who was the minister that you may have gotten involved in the early years?
We had ministers each Sunday, but I forget who they were. Oh, that's 55 years ago.
I know it. Yeah, right. You know, I used to put in the wigwams in the envelopes,
that's
and for instance, the sweets. I remember there being a Reverend Sweet.
Who wrote The Wigwam of the Isle of
Man? Cam Scarlett's.
Well, he was one of the best.
Right, right. Yeah. So I remember the Sweet family. I remember the Tullis family
right.
coming in. Of course, it'd be interesting to know when Bates began to be associated
oh, yeah.
with the camp.
Don't forget, Mike Pepe came up there.
And Mike Pepe, when
he was one of the big
there.
Men of the world, you know, in
right.
aquatics.
Oh, a swing
so,
team
so
coach on at Ohio State University.
I should tell you about Mike Pepe. When Pat Sweet, Mr. Sweet, we called him Pat Sweet,
uh-huh.
the minister was there. Sid Sweet, his son, was, uh-huh. was the captain of one of the crews. Graham Rose, he was in the Pine Tree Lodge, and that was Mike's Lodge.
Oh, I see.
And they were having that aquatics meet that after Saturday afternoon. And Sid did something Mike didn't like. And he said, "Now, Sidney, you just take your clothes off, get in your pajamas, get into bed. You're not going to be in this meet this afternoon."
Uh-huh.
He said, "Don't think you can do just as you please just because your old man works you."
Yeah, right, right. You know, I had the same thing with Mr. Bennett. Ben Bennett, I had Russ.
That's
and
right.
Some of the same kinds of things happened. And that's I saw right. Russ just past summer up at camp. And when I saw him when John was born, it was when John was born or Ann was
yeah.
born down at the University Hospital. He was there visiting either his mother or dad, I guess, who was in the hospital. And at that time, of course, that was in the early 60s, he asked me whether I was going back to camp, and I said yes. I said, "I'm hoping to go back,"
yeah.
and because I was teaching junior high at the time.
Yeah.
And he says, "Could I be your junior counselor?" And I said, you know, and that was, I was very touched by that because he had been at least in my cabin 2 years.
Yeah.
And I thought, if this guy, after not having seen him since he was 12 years old, and the disciplining that I used to have to do once in a while to get him to take a shower or something, why, it was a compliment that he was, you know, interested in being my junior counselor.
I should say so.
Well, then you would say then that the Sweets started coming up in
yeah,
the
Sweet,
late 20s
yeah,
and the early
30s. Marshall and I had called on Mr. Sweet. Took him down to the athletic club, and we had dinner there.
Uh-huh.
And he wasn't sure whether he'd come or not. We talked to him a while, and he says, "Well," he says, "maybe I'll come. If you think I can do some good up there with those boys, I'll come."
Hmm.
And he came, of course, his two boys came with him.
Yes.
Sid and Ed.
Uh-huh.
And, oh, he was wonderful. I believe half his church came after that.
Is that right?
Oh, so many of his members came up there to our camp.
Uh-huh.
As I said, Raymond and I had very little to do with it. The parents did it all for us, as far as you and Ed Hammond did a lot, of course.
Well, those were the later years, I'm not sure, right? But there are still, of course, a number of people that are very fascinated and intrigued by the camp.
Yes, that's right.
Well, what about Bates then? When did he come on the line
well,
about
Bates,
the same time?
I was directing industrial arts at Oklahoma Schools,
mm-hmm.
and Bates came to me. 2 different years and applying for a position.
Uh-huh.
I didn't take him the first time he came. I didn't recommend him. But he kept coming, and the second year, I recommended him as a teacher in the Cromer School, one of the high schools.
Uh-huh.
And I found out he was extremely interested in outdoors work.
I see.
And so he started coming to camp. He's one of the best men we've had over a period of years.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. And he's just uncanny, the intense interest he has when he gets up to Maine. He's a different man.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
He said, "If I go up to Maine, just leave my wife at home, I'd be all right."
I guess she hasn't been the camp type all the time.
Oh, no, I told class she has just as much right to like what she enjoys as
sure.
you.
Absolutely.
But he seems to think she ought to enjoy it because he does.
Mm.
It doesn't always turn out that way.
Were there other people in the 30s? I know Cam Scarlett, he went up as a boy, didn't he?
I was a little boy.
And the Scarlett's, of course, Judge Scarlett.
Cam was there over 30 years.
And were there others in the 30s, for instance, that you remember?
Oh, I don't know anything that's outstanding, because we always had a good, fine group of counselors.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And a lot of them, Raymond, got in the East and out here. 1 year, Ed, I signed, I guess you were in camp at that time, I signed 85 boys
right.
from this area, 15 from doctors' families.
Right.
And Raymond never could understand it. He'd usually sign about 60, 65, and I'd try to match him over here. So
mm-hmm.
we'd usually try to get about 135 boys.
Mm-hmm.
But I had a wonderful year that year.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we have a little over 100 boys signed now. Mm-hmm. We hope to build it up to 115 if we can.
115.
Raymond, I always figured if we had 100 boys, well, we'd break even. Mm-hmm. So it needs a little more than that. But we've always stressed the importance of good food.
Yeah.
I think it's one of the finest advertisements we have in camp. The men like it, the boys like it, and they tell the parents about it. But some camps are going on the rocks. And the reason they're on the rocks is because they tried to slight the food.
That's they cut there.
Oh, yeah, they cut there. It didn't pay. Mm-hmm. We do have good food, the very best we can buy.
Right. I know that from my experience, and I know John has appreciated it too. When did Carl Elmore... Now, you see, when I started the camp in 44... Carl Elmore was the minister.
He was a great factor. Raymond worked under him at First Presbyterian Church in Englewood.
I see.
Carl Elmore, he was up there about 15 years, he and Mrs. Elmore. Mm-hmm. He was a power of strength in that camp.
I used to see him, working in his garden out there in front of the infirmary.
He looked like some old hobo when he walked by, wouldn't he?
Right.
Little clothes, slouchy hat. Mm-hmm. At one time, he was considered one of the 5 leading preachers in the country.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can believe it. He certainly was captivating to the little 6-year-old as well as the adult.
That's the point. He knew how to do it. Mm-hmm. And he had his stories that he told that kept the attention of all age groups.
Right.
He's one wonderful fellow. Mm-hmm. But he liked Raymond extremely well. And Franny was working in the church at that time. And Raymond and Franny were married, and Dr. Elmore was very solicitous to see that they got off on the right track,
Great.
And he was a big influence with Raymond and Franny.
Mm-hmm. Did Franny grow up in Englewood? Was that her home?
I think she was around that area.
So she really didn't know that much about Maine when she was married.
She didn't know anything about Maine. Well, she came up to visit us once or twice. I remember that.
Uh-huh.
And she came up to visit Raymond, incidentally.
Sure. Well, she became a good scout, all right. And the
she
work
was a wonderful
did.
Camp mother for several years. Then she started to I don't know what the trouble was, but something happened, and Raymond tried to straighten her out several, 2-3 falls. He'd have taken a good talk with her. She'd come in and say, well, I'm resigning. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And he'd have a good talk with her, and she'd get over it, and she didn't resign.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But she's in a home now for I forget just what she does there, but I don't know the neighborhood. But she's suffering quite a lot mentally.
Is she?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I know I talked with Betty on the phone last year when we were discussing the possibility of having their farm, welled home for the summer. And Betty, of course, has been very active in California, and she had mentioned, of course, that she was now kind of taking care of her mother and so forth and so on. I was also curious about any other personalities. For instance, of course, Walt Estabrook was originally a camper there.
He came at 12 years of age.
He came at 12, and that would have been probably in the latter part of the 30s, too, wouldn't it, come to think of it?
He'd be 59 his next birthday. Mm-hmm.
So he obviously was taken by the camp and was impressed with...
Yeah, we had his whole family there, all 3 boys. Mm-hmm.
So I just thinking here then about the growth then in the 40s. Now, again, I started in 40, and Art Kiefer, you and I were discussing just a little while ago, the Art's involvement. Did he... begin to be involved in camp in the early 40s then, as you recall? I know he was singing in your quartet, your famous church quartet, by 44.
I was interested in camping. Mm-hmm. The general idea of camping, I knew what it is, and I visited his home and took some movies up there and showed his wife the movies. And mm-hmm. I was ready to get his doctorate.
I see.
And he said, no, I can stay here this summer and get my doctorate, or I can go to Kewaunee. And he said, I'd rather go to Kewaunee in the open air. So he did. Uh-huh. But he was quite a brilliant fellow.
He was, what was he? He was a teacher in North High, was it?
Yeah, chemistry.
Chemistry.
Mm-hmm. He and Carl Spangler. Mm-hmm. Carl was up there in charge of fishing.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had some outstanding men at our camp, and the great trouble today is we don't have too many of them.
Mm-hmm.
But we're doing lots more. Some good many camps have gone on the rocks, you know, because they can't get the staff.
Right, right.
That's why the trouble comes in, so we do try to train our boys. And so they'll have some of the same ideals that we have
mm-hmm.
to start with. And we retain some of them anyway.
Sure. Well, you're mentioning Carl Spangler was a good one, that certainly a gentleman that I got to know when I was up there. Another person that comes to my mind is Don Wambaugh.
Don came up there.
And he started going up
there.
He
was with the Sweets.
I see. Mm-hmm.
No, Judge Scarlett, he was with the Scarletts.
Uh-huh. Right.
And I think, he's related in some way to the Scarletts, except, anyway, they raised the boy.
Yes, the young parents were killed in an automobile accident accident, yeah. And he was adopted by Judge Scarlett.
Don came up there for several years, and he worked very well, and he worked into boating.
Mm-hmm.
And he's very good in boating.
And Roy Nickerson, I guess he must have worked with Roy Nickerson.
Roy Nickerson Raymond graduated from Springfield College. The same year.
Oh, I didn't know that.
That's written Roy Nixon. Now, that was another fine man, one of the best. Roy Nixon, he's hard to beat.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He could do so many things, and he could do boating,
mm-hmm.
Sailing. He could do all types of athletics. He was an all-around man, and a wonderful, wonderful camp man. We always knew where to find him.
Mm-hmm.
And he always argued in favor of the camp.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He was always that... Was that loyal?
And there was Howell Wendell too.
That came through Harry Marshall. Of course, Harry Marshall's daughter went and married Howell.
Right, that's right.
Oh, just as big as he was fat.
You're right.
John never knew him.
No, I don't know Chuck Wendell. Now, of course, he's still about.
Chuck was up there, and Rafe Marshall was there.
Mm-hmm.
And Rafe Marshall. I was the riding instructor when we had horses.
Oh, I see.
We had horses before you ever came there. We think mm-hmm. we had 12 horses. No, we had 6 horses. Rafe was a riding master. We had a big barn up there, which was caved in on a heavy, heavy winter snow. You know.
Uh-huh.
And Rafe handled the riding, and we charged 50 cents extra, $50 extra for boys who want to take riding.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we had a fairly good representation the first year, and the next year we didn't have so many. And the next year we didn't have any that wanted riding. Well, why the old Harry didn't want riding?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you'd be surprised to find out why it was. The kid said, well, didn't we take riding? We were riding right away from camp. We like it in camp, and we didn't riding. So they like to stay in camp better.
Sure.
So that's the reason we cut out the riding.
Nice.
Riding is quite a favorite in girls' camps now, but it's practically gone out of
mm-hmm.
popularity with boys' camps. Mm-hmm. Boys' camps used to, a lot of them used to have it.
Oh, they did?
Oh, yes. Yeah, mm-hmm.
Well, it was, as you say, just going out. I think it must have been in the late 30s that you phased it out.
That's
because
right.
I know
right.
the time I got there that it wasn't any longer... one thing that I was also fascinated by is your emphasis on dramatics night. I was always, Mr. Alkire, who I guess was a teacher in the school, he was in charge of dramatics, and each...
Yeah, that's right, he was a good man.
Each lodge would have, maybe 2 lodges would team up for one Friday night, and then the next week
that's
another 2 lodges would team up. And they would each develop a play or a skit, and it was really quite an exciting experience for the boys to have a chance to go to something like that. And it was their own, something they developed.
They try to do that now, but it doesn't come quite so frequently. I don't think we had much stunts more than 3 times all us.
Mm-hmm. I happened to be, fortunately, happened to be there one of the weekends when you did, and I was pleased. Who really kind of instituted that? Was that something that either you or Raymond did, or was
grew up? That phase of Cambridge's, Raymond
mm-hmm.
initiated that, followed through on it, and just as he did his Sunday services and singing and
mm-hmm.
things like that.
The campfire was kind of his.
That was all Raymond's. Yeah.
And I knew you knew a lot about the sailing area because when I worked in the store, and one of the sailing masters would come in and tell you what part he needed, you'd be able to suggest another opportunity or an option, or you would then go into town.
I sailed all over that lake, Fort Campbell, in a big 18-foot sponson canoe.
I see.
I put sails for it, sailing all over the lake.
Mm-hmm.
And how I love sailing. And we do have a strong sailing department with Tom Taylor now.
Yes, Tom still, you know, sends cards to John at Christmas. He seems, and I talked with him a good deal
He's an exceptional man.
Yes.
The thing is, I don't understand why he doesn't get married. That's the only trouble.
Well, he just probably hasn't found the right girl yet. It's better to do that, I guess, and get stuck with the wrong girl.
And there were over 60 boys to start with.
Yes, you mentioned.
Then the parents took it right out of our hands, and they started bringing them in for us.
Started growing.
We started with two lodges in the main dining hall, and the next year we had to build two more lodges to take care of them.
Far ahead of the same.
And it grew that rapidly.
So that would have been, what, the panther and the polecat? Did you just go right up the line?
We put falcon, panther, and pole.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, second year had a pole.
Mm-hmm.
But then we kept building, of course, as the parents kept sending them in to us, and we kept building.
Well, I remember, of course, in my days, you were building the Hawk Lodge and then the Bear Lodge.
That's right.
And so those were, you were still expanding.
The Bear Lodge was for boys 14 years of age,
mm-hmm.
and the Crow's Nest, of course, Master Campus.
Right, right.
And then the first year junior council, that's John.
Uh-huh.
They came in line. But we tried to train our men right up through from Master Campus on up. And as I said, many camps would like to have opened, but they couldn't because they didn't have a staff.
Uh-huh.
Now, one thing that's been very disappointing to us, some of our finest men would go through college.
Uh-huh.
And then when they get through college, we'd like to have them back, but they get married. We can't take the whole family. That's where the trouble is.
Yes, well, I do wonder, frankly, that's a good point, whether if you aren't careful, you're going to become more of a commune than you are a boys' camp if you are too liberal in letting the wife and the kids and everything overrun the camp, rather than for perhaps the boys who
We had two, three cases where the wives came back because they were trained to participate in the type of work, especially nature work.
Yes.
And of course, Mary came up as nature. She was with the nature for 17 years.
Sure.
And then the Butch family, Lynn Butch was in nature, and Charlie Goodwin came. Charlie Goodwin was out of the Columbus Academy.
Uh-huh.
For a while, he came up, and his wife came, worked in nature.
Sure.
So we find a department in which the wife can really work and be of value to us.
That's great. Well, John Dietrich, certainly his wife working over at the inn has been great.
How did get the men get back? Mm-hmm.
And then Mary, of course, after I was married there, why Mary came up and was the camp secretary.
That's right. She was down there in the office. That's right.
So
well, that happened in a few cases, but there's a lot of fine men we couldn't take back.
Mm-hmm. Yes, well, of course, and then sometimes when from the side of the people, too, their work doesn't allow them to have summer free.
That's right.
And I suppose it is disappointing. But then, of course, I guess a lot of times the campers then, the campers send their children back because if they can't go, at least they can have the pleasure of seeing their own boys back in camp again.
Fourth generation boys up there last year.
Is that right?
Fourth generation boys. We've had several third generation.
Mm-hmm.
And we had an old fellow that called in our cottage. I think it was the first, second year of camp. Old man tottering in, he had to get in the door.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, you know, I was a camper here way back in the 20s.
For heaven's sake.
He says, I came back to see if the camp was still here.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah, poor old fellow. Now he lived to be about 95.
Mm-hmm.
But so many of the old men have come back.
Mm-hmm.
Corny's been one of few camps that's held its own. It's a surprising thing to say, but it's true.
Right. Now, Herb Birch, one other name that came in, as I recall, he came just about after I was there, around 1945,
didn't
he? He's
been a tower of strength there for us.
And he certainly has remained, and there's an example where he has had his sons come.
That's right.
And
sons' wives.
Right.
Yeah. And, but Herb, for 2 years, Herb was the head of campcraft.
Uh-huh.
And then they had shop men. I brought some shop men from Columbus when I was supervising here. They were pretty good and wanted to come up. And we had good men in our shop. But Herb Birch proved to be one of the best.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, what about Ross Miller? I think probably with that we should no doubt discuss. How did he ever get involved in camp?
That's my error. I neglected to mention Ross Miller. Ross Miller came to camp with me, I think, the second year of camp.
Is that right?
So way back then, the second year of camp. And let me see how we got acquainted with Ross. Somebody that knew the camp very well and knew that Ross was innocent. Of course, he was a minister.
Mm-hmm.
And he's innocent in young people's activities. And he and I went up on the train together. And sorry I mentioned collected to mention about Ross.
No, that's all right. We have
a second year of camp.
No, second year. He started that early. I didn't realize that.
He was a very strong man in our camp.
Did he take then in charge of some of the church service? I know when I was there in the 40s, of course, he had the evening service, and Carl Elmore had the morning service.
Ross Miller had the morning service and then took the evening service when Dr. Elmore came.
Oh, I see.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But Ross Miller's strong fort was there were his prayers. His prayers were masterpieces.
Mm-hmm.
We saved all of them. We used them for several seasons, his prayers. It's just unique. Well, he'd formulate a prayer.
Uh-huh.
And he couldn't help but listen to it.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a very strong fellow. And he was interested in swimming. He was interested in mountain climbing. And he's interested in tennis, but he's interested in several activities. In the first 3-4 years there, well, all the counselors were on all the teams.
Uh-huh.
Raymond and I were on a baseball team, and Harry Marshall's on a different team, and Max Savelle's on a different team. They all played with the boys, you see.
Mm-hmm.
I went through.
Well, I think, you know, that as we stop and think of key personalities, I think, I'm sure that some of the people that may have an opportunity to hear this tape someday will be thinking of a particular counselor that he had. But, you know, maybe a good thing at this point would be to let John here, who's been sitting here very patiently, maybe ask a few key things about maybe how a camper in this generation would look at things. John, did you want to ask us?
One of my first questions was, how did you think of her? How did the name Kewaunee come into being?
Well, Raymond coined that phrase. He said it's an Indian name. And I can't prove it, but he said it's an old Indian name, Kewaunee. And the Kewaunee tribe, he said, were located up around the Ramsey Lakes, and going to the coast, they came down through our lake, down Webb River. But that's a good question, John, Kewaunee. And I don't know, I can't swear by it, but it's been a good name though over all these years, Camp Kewaunee.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing I was wondering about was, how did the maroon and the gray competition get started with them?
Well, we decided we'd have two sides in camp, and what would it be? I guess they had it, chose up sides and they had contributions from the different ones, and one said, well, gray's a good color, and maroon's another good color.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way it started.
Well, of course, you have a scarlet and gray from Ohio State, too.
Yes,
but somebody might have been.
Right. Yeah.
But so, in other words, your level program and some of the other things.
Level program. I initiated that.
Uh-huh.
I initiated the achievement level program. And that's we've used that. And I know we had a fellow up there. What is his name now? He was a assistant athletic director up at Ohio State and teaching wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that boy's name. And I call achievement levels. He says, well, he liked attainment levels. I says, no, I think achievement level sounds better. So we adopted achievement levels instead of attainment levels.
I see.
Yes. we started that way back in the early 20s. We started that achievement levels.
Well, I remember too when Ma Frank was there, when you know her cabin. I still refer to it as Ma Frank's cabin.
Yes. Oh, yes.
And I think this was a wonderful opportunity for your mother to have a kind of an exciting place to be in the summer.
She was a great camp mother, I tell you.
And
she
of course,
was good. Betty used to come down and see mother. Betty used to come down and see mother. Mother just worshipped her as a little youngster. I'll never forget the day that little Betty, she just was pregnant, baby was all there. Ma Frank, you know,
mm-hmm.
He used to sit outside there. And Betty had a shovel in her hand, and I went around there, and she wielded that shovel in the air and knocked my glasses.
Oh, boy.
Ma said, ain't she cute?
Betty couldn't do anything wrong, huh?
I could have thrown her in the lake.
Right.
Ain't she cute?
Oh, boy, yeah, that could have been serious, too. Right.
Didn't break my glasses, though, unfortunately.
Oh, that was very lucky. Now, you and Raymond then grew up where in Maine?
At Cumberland Mills.
Cumberland Mills.
It's Westbrook, Cumberland Mills. It's sort of a suburb of Portland. It's 5 miles out of Portland.
Then did you get your degree in teaching right there in Maine?
Yes, right there.
At Cumberland Falls.
Technical school in Maine. Warren Sloyd School is called. Mm-hmm. You know, when industrial arts first came to this country, it came as Sloyd, S-L-O-Y-D.
Oh.
It was initiated in Sweden out in the early 80s.
Hmm.
And Gustav Larsen brought it to Boston. They had the Gustav Larsen Sloyd School in Boston. It's the first time it was ever initiated in this country at all.
Mm-hmm.
And from Boston, it spread to different states, and it came to Maine.
Mm-hmm.
And I attended the first school, the second school where Sloyd was ever introduced in Maine. I became so intrigued and interested in it that we used to send the little kids to the Sloyd School once a week.
Mm-hmm.
I was so interested in it, I couldn't sleep the night before. I became so enthused about it.
Sure.
I decided then and there, if anything ever happened, I want to teach Sloyd when I grow up.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's very interesting.
And they had the technical school, the Warren Technical School, and I graduated from that, and I had 2 years of teacher training before I ever came out here.
Mm-hmm. What brought you to Ohio? That's another...
Well, that's interesting, too. Harry Lowell, who introduced industrial arts, or introduced manual training in Columbus, mm-hmm. lived next door neighbor of mine.
Oh.
And he went through this Lloyd School, the same one I went through.
For heaven's
sake. He was the first director of industrial arts in the Columbus schools. And he knew I was about ready to apply for a position,
mm-hmm.
so he offered a position in Columbus. So
yeah.
I came out here
mm-hmm.
with Harry. And shortly after he left, when I was promoted to the directorship of the Columbus schools,
mm-hmm.
which I had for about 10 years, and then, of course, I was promoted then to a principalship, which I had for 20 years.
Mm-hmm. And Florence, was she out here? Did you meet Florence out here in Ohio?
Now, Florence had a beautiful voice.
Yes.
She was a beautiful singer. We were in a quartet together, but she had an unusually fine mezzo-soprano voice,
mm-hmm.
and one of the friends of the family, he was in a building alone, a very wealthy fellow, wanted to send her to New York to study,
mm-hmm.
and her father was an old crank. He said, no, well, I was in my daughter to that wicked spot,
mm-hmm.
and so she didn't get to go, but she had a beautiful voice. We used to do a lot of singing. Sing the church Sundays there, and duets and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
See, that's the way Florence and I got acquainted.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting.
And
yeah.
She was extremely efficient as a businesswoman.
Mm-hmm.
She did all the buying for the camp and all the buying for the inn. She developed all the menus for both places,
mm-hmm.
and nobody put anything over on her.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Pepin made the statement one time, I heard it time for some sense, well, Raymond and George aren't running the camp, Florence running this camp.
Yes, well, she was still running the inn, of course, when I was there, and going in after the mail in the afternoon,
right.
As far as that way, we would, you know, stop by at the inn from time to time. Then, of course, Mother and Dad came up and stayed at the inn there in the 40s.
She did an awful lot of oil painting, too.
Yes, I know.
Oh, she did
number
an awful lot.
Paintings that she did up there also. Sometimes when you look back on something, it is interesting circumstances, how they affect your life. You know, how I ended up getting an economic education, and how I happened to know Frank Hara, who invited me to go to camp, and
It's circumstances like this are really very interesting. Yeah, John, go ahead.
I was just wondering, how did you develop the idea of the Kewaunee Inn?
Hey, pardon?
How did you develop the idea of the Kewaunee Inn?
Well, that's a good question. Now, the Weld Inn, you know where the Weld Inn is?
Yes.
Well, that's the only inn around there. And parents coming up to visit their boys, you send them up to Weld Inn. Well, they had about 10 or 12 bedrooms, and only one bathroom, the end of a long hall. And Raymond and I decided, well, we want our parents to come up here and have the very best we can give them. So we bought the property up there and developed Weld Inn. I drew all the plans for it and developed it. And it's a very comfortable place to stay.
Sure.
And Florence was ahead of it. That's the way we developed it.
Well, same thing with the infirmary. Now, that was kind of an advanced for camps to have as complete an infirmary and nurse, camp nurse, and so
forth. Yes, that's right. We had our own nurse and a camp infirmary where you take care of all the incidentals.
When did you institute that?
Oh, that was instituted in the early 20s.
Early 20s, that was one of the beginnings.
When we started the building, we had the chemical, we had to put up the dining hall and had to put up a big storage place, had an electric motor, mm-hmm. and a gasoline motor that run on electric dynamo to put furnish electric current for the dining hall.
Mm-hmm.
And then we put another building with chemical toilets.
Mm-hmm.
That's all we had then. Of course, we had a caretaker that emptied them whenever they needed it.
Mm-hmm.
So finally, we went on to the flush toilets, which, of course, was better.
Mm-hmm.
But we used those chemical toilets for about 7 or 8 years.
What about Emma and Lawrence Briggs? When did they get tied in with your camp? And, of course, she especially, but both of them really were major institutions.
Lawrence was a chef in the Army. Mm-hmm. He was a darn good cook.
Mm-hmm.
Lawrence was a fine fellow too. And Emma, let me see now how I get a hold of Emma. Florence got Emma to assist there, found out through Lawrence that Emma was interested in cooking. And Florence said, "Well, Emma, I want you to go down to camp and take charge of the baking there."
Mm-hmm.
Well, she said, "No, I never could do it." She said, "Well, I know you can do it. You go down there and see what you can do."
Mm-hmm.
She did, and she worked out extremely well.
The one thing that perhaps we should backtrack on, I believe it was before we started our taping, you were telling me about, of course, being at the mountain and looking down at camp, and then how you were able to borrow some money to get something started, because, you know, even today, young people are thinking, you know, how can I become part of the system? If you wouldn't mind kind of telling a little bit about how you financially were able to get people interested.
I'll tell you about that, because first of all, we had our ideals on just what we wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
What we did, we wanted to do well. And I told him that Mr. Morrison looked us over and thought we looked like two honest American boys. And,
mm-hmm.
And he gave us $5,000 to start
with. Now, he was in what bank? He was
at the Wilton Trust Company.
He was at the Wilton Trust Company.
And Mother had $3,000 on her own, and ever since she had, she turned that over to us.
Mm-hmm.
All Raymond and I had were our positions.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the way it got started. And then when they were building the dining hall, Fez Schofield was the head carpenter, and he had 3-4 other carpenters assisting him. See, they had to cut all those trees and peel them, don't you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it was all log work.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, "I've got to have some money to pay these men. These men want to be paid." Well, I asked him if he couldn't hold them off until spring when the tuition money started to come in. He said, "No, I've got to have the money. I'm going to foreclose on you."
Mm.
Well, there's a fellow by the name of Herbert Berry that practically gave me all the training I ever had in industrial arts work. He was a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
He was just like a dad to me, and he was interested in what we were doing. I wrote to him, told him that I couldn't borrow any money from the building loans. And I said, "We got to have this money, or can you loan us some money? And of course, we pay you the interest."
Mm-hmm.
My golly, the next thing, the next mail, he sent me $3,000 right off the bat. Mm-hmm. He says, "I don't want any interest at all."
Friends.
And he said, I tell you how you can pay it back. He told us certain ones to whom we should pay it. And we finally paid it with no interest.
Doesn't that sound like
a wonderful thing? So we named the Recreation Hall the Hubbard L. Berry Recreation
Right,
Hall.
I never knew where that name came from. Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, he was my teacher, and you know, he was a wonderful fellow. He was a fellow that could teach lots more than he could do himself.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a stimulus to boys that did that type of work. He got me into some carving. You know, one time I expected to be a sculptor. Did I tell you that?
No, never
did. I was already be a sculptor. And he got me interested in this. This lion lucerne that I carved. It's supposed to represent a dying lion.
Oh, yes.
And
for heaven's sake. That, you did that.
Oh, yes, I did that.
Mm-hmm. And, my goodness.
Now, this old fellow's supposed to represent a dying lion. My lion looks sick now, doesn't he, John?
Mm-hmm.
John.
Well, that's still quite a work of art, though.
Oh, it was quite a job. Mm-hmm. And I took it down to the mill where I was working in the mill during my vacation. Boss Carpenter took it around and showed it to different men.
Mm-hmm.
One of the men says, what's this for?
Yeah.
He says, well, that's what hurts him. A spear in his side.
Yes, I was just about ready to ask about that, because...
Swiss soldiers went to the aid of the... French, in the French Revolution, they went to the aid of the French.
Mm-hmm.
So they were all killed. And this Thorwaldsen, who was the big sculptor, the sculptor of this thing. I saw the original sculpture. Raymond Pons and I went to, Mary and I went to Switzerland, just so I could see the Lion Lucerne there.
Mm-hmm.
It's a gorgeous thing.
Mm-hmm.
You've never been there, have you?
No, I've never been to Switzerland. But in fact, Mary and I are hoping maybe to get over into Europe next year. John is going to be taking his third year of German, and we thought he has an opportunity then to become an exchange student over there next summer. So that he perhaps will have to forego going to camp then in 78, but that it will be a marvelous opportunity for him for that 1 year to get a little bit
more. Maybe next year?
Yes, not this coming summer, but a year from this summer, right.
78, you say?
78, right. So it'll be quite an experience for him. And
John, when you get married, marry somebody that can work in camp, will you?
Yeah, he's been very active in scouting and has worked with younger boys and is now kind of an assistant scoutmaster role. And... So he has, and he loves the outdoors. He's going to go on some sort of a survival weekend, just living off of the land in around 2 weeks. And the young man who is currently in charge of the scout troop is a big husky fellow of around 25 who is a member of our church there, our Congregational Church in Mansfield Center, and who also works in taking care of the orchards for the university.
Are you Congregationalist?
We belong to the Congregational Church.
I
partly impressed by the church service. I grew up in the Methodist Church here, Bexley Methodist, and I still admire a great deal of Methodist Church, but like this Engaged Social Action magazine that's now being put out jointly by the Congregational United Church of Christ and the Methodists. So I have identified very closely, partly because of the church services that I attended as a camper at Kewaunee.
John, which age boys do you like to work with best?
Well,
which lodge do you like to be in? That's what I
get. I would probably like to work with them. Some of the younger boys.
What? Yes.
Between about
10, 11, 12, right through that.
8 to 10.
8 to 10.
So you're talking about the Panther Lodge, the Pole Camp.
Panther Pole Camp.
I see.
Possibly Eagle. That's what I did as
that's
a master camper. I was in the Eagle Lodge, and I enjoyed that a lot.
That's good.
And I wouldn't like to get with too many of the older.
How'd
boys.
You like your counselor in the Eagle Lodge? Pretty well.
I thought yes, he was. He was very good.
He's coming.
Bill Longshart. He knew how to camp. Keep control of the boys.
Yeah.
And he did a good job. He kept order pretty well. And I thought he did a very good job.
He didn't like sitting on the porch, and I didn't either. I think that was a big mistake to cut out holes in the wall of that dining hall.
Yes.
And close in the porch. I didn't like that a bit.
Mm-hmm.
It's too two different units there. You have the unit inside and the unit on the porch.
You still feel separate off.
Yeah, you're separated. I didn't like it a bit. But and then there was to say about it.
What about the 50s now? Were there any key personalities in the 50s that perhaps we have overlooked that we would mention? Of course, you mentioned your Mary coming to Kewaunee, and Mr. Dexter, of course, is one person that comes to my mind.
Of course, he was strong in the nature department, especially mineralogy.
Mm-hmm.
He's very good in that.
How did Mr. Dexter get associated with
Kent? Well, Raymond got him because he was interested in minerals.
I see.
And he found out that he was interested, and he married a fine job there a few years in geology.
Well, of course, he got in love with Maine, coming now. I guess he still has his house in Wilton, doesn't he? And Ed Chase, what I'm curious about how Ed Chase became involved.
Ed Chase, I forget, he's been there nearly 30 years. He won't be back.
He will not?
No, he had some trouble with Walter. I don't know what it was. But I hate it like everything. But Ed made a splendid contribution in his going and coming to the chief. He did that very well.
Mm-hmm.
And Ed is somewhat of a negative character that... I don't think it ever seemed to be just right the way Ed liked it, and get on Walter's nerves, I guess, and on the rest of us too. But Ed had tough luck. He lost his two jobs. He was sitting some dinner school in one place in New Jersey, and he lost that job, and he got another job, and he lost that.
Mm-hmm.
And he was in love with a girl, and this girl's mother wouldn't let him in the house.
Mm-hmm.
He had some experience there.
Uh-huh.
But I hated like everything. I wrote a long letter to Walter. I said, I ought to have him back. And then I wanted him to work on the wigwam, too.
Uh-huh.
Because Mitch Greenwald and his family won't be back.
Mm-hmm.
And then he has a girl that was there 2 years ago that's going to have a wigwam. And I said, if she's going to do all that typing, ought to be something to initiate the procedure and just what they're going to have in the wigwam.
Right.
She's just done the typing. That's enough.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't get to first base with that. And Ed would like to come back and work in the wigwam. I thought he'd be fine.
Mm-hmm.
But Walter said, well, he might put something in that the parents would object to, and he did write some articles that were too pleasing.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that Mrs. Greenwald last year that... she came to Walter with an article Ed had written in the wigwam. And she says, I don't think this ought to go in the wigwam. The parents would be resentful for it.
Uh-huh.
They didn't put it in.
Right.
But that's Ed.
He doesn't have too much judgment.
Too much tact.
He's a very honest, very sincere, hardworking.
Yes, and he knows chemicals, made his ease, been in his factory all his life. Mm-hmm. He was our chief mounted man for several years there. Mm-hmm. He knew all about it.
What about Pop Noel? That's of course, he was my senior counselor in the Crow's Nest.
And Pop, I don't want to leave Pop out of the picture. Mm-hmm. He was a very strong man in our camp. Of course, he was head counsel there for a while.
Yes, just after, I think, after being...
He lived in Ma Frank's cabin, didn't he?
Yes, he did. His wife came up then.
That's right.
And stayed after we had him as our senior counselor in 46.
Oh, I admired Pop. I'd like to have him back right now, if I could. Some of those old men back, but...
How did he happen to get involved? Was he from Columbus?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see how he got involved. Well, it wasn't through my initiative, but it was through somebody else.
I see.
Got him interested.
Somebody that he knew that was going to camp.
Yes. Somebody that knew him and knew what he was interested in,
mm-hmm.
and they told me about him, I guess, then I approached him about it.
I see.
But he was all right. He came there during that period when we had, during the big depression, 29, 30, 31, right through there.
I see.
He was one of them. I know that I told Raymond, I says, now, we better keep our contacts.
Mm-hmm.
If we lose our contacts, we're going to lose our camp. So I said, if we keep our contacts, we'll cut the tuition right in two in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And we called up all the counselors, including Pop Noel, and we said, now, this is what we've done. We can only pay you just half what we showed you we'd pay you. Mm-hmm. Every man came, took his money.
Is that right?
The following year, we turned boys away. Mm. But if we'd lost those contacts,
yes,
we'd never get them back again.
Well, going back now to the financing side, I think there were some other people that kind of got involved in kind of a silent partnership, didn't they, over the years, in supporting the camp and continuing to give you an opportunity to expand your facilities as you needed to have a little bit larger camp. For instance, you know, I mean, when they have the stockholders meeting up there now and so forth, weren't there some of the people, I'm trying to think of it, like Mr. Toll, was Mr. Toll one, or that other gentleman that that owns the beach down across the way there, wasn't there another, I'm trying to think of his name, I do know it, that was kind of in, had a financial interest in the camp.
Dummer's Beach?
Well, it wasn't Mr. Dummer's.
There were three Dummers.
What is the real estate? There's a gentleman around in that deck of the woods. I saw his name on a sign, I think, going from Weld to Wilton. There is a kind of a real estate type of person now. I don't know whether it's the son or the grandson, but I recognize the name of that.